the ways a Hebrew became a slave was extreme poverty. He sold his liberty because of extreme poverty. A father sells his son into slavery. This sounds bad, but if we understood it, I don't think it would be quite as bad as what it sounds like. Debtors might become slaves. A thief unable to pay fines might become a slave. And a Hebrew might become a prisoner and sold as a slave. So these are the ways, and we're talking about Hebrew slaves now. So it says in verse 3, and if he comes in alone, he shall go out alone. And if he is the husband of a wife, then the wife shall go out with him. So if he comes in married, and after 7 years he goes out, he takes his wife with him. And again, another explanation for what if he gets married there. Verse 4, if his master gives him a wife, and she bears him sons and daughters, the wife of her children shall belong to her master, and he shall go out alone. It's interesting, isn't it? It sounds pretty almost cruel to us and hard to accept, but if he comes in and his master gives him a woman to be his wife, and she bears him children and has, you know, and is his wife, but initially the slave owner owned this woman, or she was his servant, and so the situation is, if he gets married, has all these children, if she was belonged to the slave owner before they got married, then she had to stay, she had to remain. But notice verse 5, if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out as a free man. Best solution, isn't it, or best situation, it sounds like, as long as the master treats him fairly. And then his master shall bring him to God, and he shall bring him to the door of the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him permanently. Ouch. Sounds like kind of a hard thing, but how many people get their ears pierced today? What's that now?
He got to keep his family
that way. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And as I say, if the slave-master relationship is as God would have it to be, it could be really good that way. And that's really good. And if a man sells his daughter as a female slave, she is not free. She is not to go free as the male slaves do. This sounds unfair. And thank you, Rex. You're going to save me all the way through this. You're right. Absolutely right. As I said, we just don't quite understand slavery. And this sounds bad, but really, if you really dig into this, as far as the way the women were treated, if they were treated the way God has set up his laws with fairness and so on, it was not bad. In fact, they were protected. You have to think about a woman without a way to provide for herself out there, and a good slave owner being very fair about it, she can be provided and cared for all of her life. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master, who designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He does not have authority to sell her to a foreign people because of his unfairness to her. So here is what I called fairness restored. And again, to understand this fully, maybe we'd had to live in that society, but really, when you think about it, it is fairness restored. And if he designates her for his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. And again, this is going to be treating her fairly. And if, this is verse 10, he takes to himself another woman, he may not reduce her food, her clothing, or her conjugal rights. By conjugal rights, this is her marital rights. It's all in fairness here. she should receive the clothing, the food, the support, and children just the same as anyone else. And if he will not do these three things for her, then she shall go out for nothing without paying of money. So she's free to go if it's not fair. And as I keep repeating, I think that as you look at this, you'll find that it's a system that God really makes slavery fair. And slavery to them was thought of different than we think of it today. Okay, any questions there? If you have questions, speak up, because probably we're going to go through this pretty fast, so I'm just going to mainly read it. So from verse 12 on through the end of this chapter, we started talking about capital offenses. And the thing that I noticed in most of this, it kind of sticks out to me, as I said, these were written some 3,500 years ago. And as you read these, you find that so much of our laws, so much of how we react to capital offenses, really just almost comes from here. It's right here, what God says here. And that's striking to me, because that's how mighty and great God's word really is. So in verse 12, he says, "He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death." Does that sound familiar in our society? I mean, maybe we don't carry that out as we should, and there's a lot of argument, and it's changed even in my lifetime. But what do we call that? Capital punishment, yeah. Well, if he strikes a man so that he dies, and that is a murder, you're right, if he who strikes a man and he dies shall surely be put to death. This is a life for a life. This is capital punishment. If you go out and kill somebody, capital punishment. And I know our laws today are pretty lax on this, and some states still do practice capital punishment, but it's fewer and fewer. But if he does not die and wait for him, now this would be an accident, but God let him fall into his hand, then I will appoint you a place for which he may flee. Now, they hadn't set up these cities of refuge yet, but they were set up. And so this is talking about an accidental death, the way I understand it. And then he goes on in 14 and says, "If, however, a man acts presumptuously towards his neighbor so as to kill him craftily, you are to take him even from my altar, that he may die." Now, I understand this to be what was done before the cities of refuge. So if he goes out presumptuously, does that sound something that we use in our vocabulary about killing people now? Yes, premeditated, absolutely. This would be premeditated murder. But he has a way to go ahead and take care of that. And he says, take him even from my altar that he may die. And the way I understand this, as I said, this was a way of going ahead and carrying out capital punishment even before the cities of refuge.
Well, one of the conditions was if you got to the altar and you got your hands on the altar, you were safe.
Okay, yes.
That wasn't God's way.
Right. Good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, there was, I remember this now. If you grabbed hold of the altar, that protected you, but they're going to take him from the altar. In other words, he still gets the punishment. And now, notice this, "And he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Does God speak something about respect for parents? He certainly does. Wow. Isn't that something? And boy, we could talk a lot about that today, and how the respect for parents, even in my lifetime, how it's been kind of let slide, and that respect isn't there as it used to be. "And he who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or he is found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. So people were kidnapped to be sold into slavery. And I don't know, Rex and I, we're not old enough to remember this either, I don't think, but remember Charles Lindbergh. He was the first man to fly across the Atlantic Ocean. And he came back and people were just heaping up praise on him. He flew the Spirit of St. Louis. And he came back and he had all this publicity, all this praise, and his son was kidnapped. And his son was killed. And after that, they made kidnapping a capital punishment. It may have been before, but they really were enforcing it. And to this day, it still is capital punishment in kidnapping cases. Any comment on that? It's interesting. And he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Again, that respect for parents. And wow, what can you say? Wow. And if a man have a quarrel, and one strikes the other with a stone with his fist, and he does not die but remains in bed, now this is a fight. And if he gets up and walks around outside of his staff, he gets okay. Then he who struck him shall go unpunished. He shall only pay for his loss of time and shall take care of him until he is completely healed. So here's two men, they get in a fight, and one gets struck and he's hurt, he goes down, but he gets back up and he gets well. Now remember, it doesn't say who started the fight or how it got going. It's probably both of them are to blame, but he does give punishment for the one who is not hurt and gives relief for the one who is hurt. Okay. And if a man strikes his male or female slave with a rod and he dies at his hands, he shall be punished. Sounds like maybe he's not giving capital punishment here, but in Genesis 9 and 6, I think is the answer. It says, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. So if you go back in God's word, you find the answer. There's the punishment. If, however, he survives a day or two, no vengeance shall be taken, for he is his property. The assumption is that this person survives and is okay. Now, might sound a little stern, and so why he would strike his slave, and I don't have all the answers to this, but an argument, a master and slave relationship, there could be bad blood, as we might say, on both sides. So that might be an answer to this. It still sounds a little unfair. If men struggle with each other and strike a woman with a child so that she has a miscarriage, yet there is no further injury, he shall surely be fined as a woman's husband may demand of him, and he shall pay as the judges decide. This is interesting, and you think, well, this probably doesn't happen too often. Might have been a little more in their confinements of their houses or something, and I suppose it does happen today. But I think that a couple of things here. It goes on in 23 and says, but if there is any other or any further injury, then you shall appoint a penalty, life for life. So this kind of answers it, doesn't it? Now, if two men struggle and someone kills a woman that's with child, the answer is a life for a life. And he's not just talking about the mother, he's talking about the child. And I intend to look it up, and I don't know where it is, but there is somewhere else it says, it talks about a woman with a child, and it talks about the sanctity of life. And of course, we have a lot of publicity over life in the womb. And this right here, again, suggests, and it not just suggests, it is, there's life in the womb. And to kill that baby, it's murder. I don't know how else you say it. So in 23, it just plainly says, a life for a life. And then he goes on with something that's a little familiar with us because it comes, it's a quote that Christ uses in 24. Any comment on what I just said there about that? Everybody, okay. In verse 24, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot, a burn for a burn, a wound for a wound, and a bruise for a bruise. Wow. Pretty easy to understand, isn't it? Now, we don't follow this to the letter today, but this is a great guideline for what we punishment we kneel out for, you know, what we pass out for people that do these kind of things. It's easy to understand and it's plain to read, but I don't know of anywhere where they'd say, okay, you blinded that guy, you put out his eye, excuse me, and we're going to put out your eye. But there is a punishment for that. And in Matthew 5 and 38, Jesus, he uses this, but here's what the old law says, but here's what Jesus said. He goes farther. He says, if a man slaps you on the cheek, turn the other cheek. If someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, well, give him your cloak also. If he wants you to go 1 mile, go 2. Give to him that asks, and from him that wants to borrow, turn not away. And it seems like that Jesus goes almost against this law. But in Jesus' teaching, he's telling you how far to go in loving your neighbor or loving your fellow man. So interesting, Jesus used it in the New Testament, and interesting that the law can be used in our laws today as well. Yes, Rex, thank you.
I was just going to say, it seems to me, as you read 22 through 24, that they're tied together.
Okay.
That whole passage seems to be talking about two men who are getting into a fight, and somehow they injure a woman, and she has a miscarriage. And if all she loses is the baby, then whoever caused the miscarriage by striking the woman or however he did it has to pay what the husband demands. And then if there's further damage, then we get into the results in 23 and 24. If there's any further damage, if the woman is killed in the process, if whatever might happen, physically damaged, then it's eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. I'm not certain that this isn't typical of a lot of passages that we want to say a certain thing, or we're going to take it a little bit further so we can justify our response to a negative situation.
Okay. And you may be 100% right. I don't know. But I did, in what I read on this, it made a point, which was Dehoff, but he made a point of saying that there was no further injury. In other words, the child was born premature, but it was okay. And now, I don't know if he can prove that. I don't know if I could prove that. But that's what he said. So you may be right. I don't know. It may all be hinged together there.
The concept of miscarriage goes beyond, at least I think, goes beyond the child being born premature.
Okay.
We have is it the same you have? Is it a revised version? One says premature and the other one says miscarriage.
So okay.
I wonder.
Okay.
Well, even on the American Standard Version, it says that her fruit departs.
What does it say?
Her fruit departs.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just read the one, and he took it as there was like a premature baby, maybe born in which can, before its time, which can survive real easy, you know. It all depends how early it was, but yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. And they could all be hinged together too, very well. Okay, I don't know if that answered it or not. I don't know if that's, anybody else have any other input on that? I do know that I think everybody here agrees that there's life in the womb. And to take that life, it's a life for a life then. And to injure that baby, it's just like injuring somebody, with, someone that, after they're born, so. So then we get back to 26, and he goes on to say, and if a man strikes the eye of a male or female slave and destroys it, he shall let him go free on account of the eye, freedom. And if he knocks out a tooth of his male or female slave, he shall let him go free on account of his tooth. So strange a little bit there, but still, I guess what that's doing, it's restricting the slave owner from just going around and hurting the slaves. That's the way I look at it. And if an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall go unpunished. So we're entering something here that I might be able to speak to a little bit better, being raised on a farm. And we had animals, and not all animals are nice, I'll put it that way. And I understand this a little bit, and in our society, it's pretty hard for us to understand. This is an accident, and the ox is put to death. Now, if you put an ox to death, you might say, well, I'm going to take the flesh of the ox, and even though that's the law, we kill it. And so the owner of the ox might say, well, kill the ox, and we'll have steaks for the next 6 months. Well, this doesn't permit him to do that. if I'm reading this right. Is that right? Yes. And, yes, yes.
The owner is punished by not being
able to. Absolutely. Yeah. And I couldn't see that in there, but now I see. And that's right. It shall not be eaten. So actually, you think about it, here's an ox, he goes out to your ox, and he kills somebody, or he kills somebody. and you say, well, I'm sorry, it's a mean ox. And then he says, but I'll just take it and we'll have steaks, as I said. That's not going to happen. And then he's going to talk more about it here. And if, however, an ox is previously in the habit of goring and its owner has been warned, yet does not confine it, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. You know, the society I grew up in, I can somewhat understand this, because it was expected of animals' owners, and if the animal was a mean animal, that they should take care of the animal. And I know of situations where, particularly bulls who are very big and heavy, they're not oxen, but they are the same family, and they're very big and they're very mean sometimes. And they can become almost uncontrollable. In this situation, there were people that would actually just, the best thing to do is just have the animal put down, go ahead and, before it hurts somebody, you put the animal down, then you can go ahead and have your steaks. But yeah, there's animals that's this way, I know that. And if a ransom is demanded of him, then he shall give it for redemption of his life, however, whatever is demanded of him.
That's the owner of the bull.
Yes, and this is criminal neglect, is what it is. And you can see that in our society today. And what happens in our society today with animals is, what's the one thing that has happened? What animal? A dog. Yeah. And some people, even though they know that the animal would hurt somebody badly, they will not take the animal and put it down. And then all at once we hear of this situation where somebody really gets hurt. So I think we could kind of relate it that way. Whether it gores a son or a daughter, it shall be done to him according to the same rule, a life for a life, in other words. If an ox gores a male or a female slave, the owner shall give her or give his or her master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be destroyed. 30 shekels of silver is the price of a slave, and this should be the minimum in the case of death, but refer back to verses 28 and 30 is what I have here, and it really goes back a life for a life then, if you go back to verses 28 through 30. Does that make sense? The guy's not getting off easy, in other words. And if a man opens a pit, again, this is something in our society that's not too common, but when I was a young man, people dug wells, and there were lots of wells, and some of them were very dangerous, and I remember wells that were left uncovered. And people could be responsible if somebody falls in those wells, and it did happen. If a man opens a pit or digs a pit and does not cover it over, and an ox or a donkey falls in it, go ahead to 34. The owner of the pit shall make restitution. He shall give money to the owner, and the dead animal shall be his. So anyway, this is something that we don't see a lot of in this society because, well, in this area particularly, the pits are made sure that they're made safe. But where I'm from, it was quite common to see open wells, and as kids, we'd go to old houses, abandoned old houses, and there'd actually be wells there that were open. And once in a while, kids would fall in them, too. And animals, too, by the way. And if a man's ox hurts another so it dies, then he shall sell the ox and divide it price equally. And also they shall divide the dead ox. So this is just being equitable here. And if it is known that the ox was obviously in the habit of goring, let its owner and its owner has not confined it, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall become his. So again, a way of making it more equitable. And I can tell you again, dealing with animals, this in the society I grew up in, this would not have been that uncommon. And animals would get out, and particularly speaking about bulls, and they could actually go out and hurt somebody else's animal as well as a human being. Any questions on any of that? Everybody got that down? It's interesting. And yet, when you look at God's laws, he's making it very equitable, very fair. And he's commanding responsibility on people. And that's what we need today. We need responsibility. People need responsibility. Okay. Any questions? We're going to go to chapter 22 and make sure we finish here. These are laws against theft, trespass, usury, and etc. Many judicial laws. So if a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it and sells it, he shall pay five oxen or for the ox or four sheep for the sheep. And so this is a pretty heavy fine. It's a principle here. And in our society, we have laws that this principle is followed as well. It's a principle in society. You can't just go out and take somebody else's possessions and just not expect to pay a price for it. And yes, isn't that what has happened in the last few years in our society? People have taken, stolen, done all of this without having any responsibility. And what does it lead to? I don't. What else can I say? That's our society
today. Where our society is today.
Pardon?
It leads to where our society is today.
Oh, absolutely. And it's only been expedited 10,000 times in the last couple of years. I mean, it's just gotten a lot worse. We had it before, but it's just gotten a lot worse. If the thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guiltiness on his account. And yes, this does work today. We do hear of people breaking in. We do hear of people being shot while they were breaking in. And the person that shot them, the owner of the house, is set free. Now, I agree that this sometimes is a very question. I guess I hate to use questionable because it doesn't always work fair for the owner of the house that's getting broken in, it seems like. But this law is followed somewhat today. But if now this is interesting too. If the sun has risen on him, there will be no blood guiltiness on his account. He shall surely make restitution. If he owns nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. So this, the way I understand this, and you may look at it different, but if a guy's breaking in, and this is a little different then, and you catch him, and it's daylight, and you see who it is, and you know who it is, don't go out and take the gun and shoot him. That's what he's saying here. But he needs to make restitution, and if he can't pay for it, then he needs to be sold for his theft. In other words, go into slavery. So that's the way I would understand that. And maybe in our society, if I caught someone coming in my house at night and I was threatened and my family was threatened, Pam used to always say, I don't think I could have shot anybody until after she had children. And she would always say, I think that I could shoot somebody. I think I could kill them if they were coming in and damaging my children. So, in fact, I know of a case, I don't have time to tell you about it, which this very thing happened. And so, but if you see the person and it's daylight and you just go ahead and say, you're dead, buddy, there's a little bit different responsibility there. If what he stole is actually found alive in his possession, now we're talking livestock because a lot of times that's what they did. They stole livestock. Whether an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall pay double. In other words, there's going to be payment and he's not going to get away scot-free here. And if a man lets a field or a vineyard be grazed bare and lets his animal loose so that grazes in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the beast of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. I understand this. I understand this fully because I know what happens. A couple of things that happens, and it's not as much now because there's not livestock like where I just came from, where I was just visiting. But many, there used to be lots and lots of farmers out there, and sometimes a man doesn't have enough grazing pasture for his livestock. And when livestock get hungry, they go to where there's food, and oftentimes they break out. And I know, and personally had it happen, people's livestock get out and they eat your corn. And it's only because the owner of the livestock wasn't caring for them properly. So that applies even to this day, not so much to what probably we're familiar with here. And then the verse 6 is kind of the same thing. If a fire breaks out and spreads to a thorn bush so that stake grain or the standing grain or the field itself is consumed, he who started the fire shall surely make restitution. Well, there's arson today and there's neglect. And we know about neglect, don't we? We've got a fire going out here. And I was just talking to Nancy before class started and asked her, do they know how that fire got started? Well, it could have been started by accident. That's for sure. We know lightning starts fires. We know that neglect starts fires, and then we know that arsonists start fires. So we have a situation like that today. And then it was very, very bad because a man sets a fire, and before you know it, you know, the fire spreads and consumes another man's wheat crop or crops. Hey, do we know of anybody that set fire to foxes' tails and let them burn up some fields? I think we got to, you can read about that. Anyway, it does happen. So where am I? Verse 7, a man gives his neighbor money and goods to keep for him, and it is stolen from the man's house. If the thief is caught, he shall pay double. That's the thief. And in verse 8, if the thief is not caught, then the owner of the house shall appear before the judges and determine whether he laid his hands on his neighbor's property. It's possible that the man that was supposed to be watching out for it stole it. And I'm sure there could be a determination of where there was negligence on if somebody gave you some property to keep for him while he went on vacation, and you were totally negligent in watching out for it, then in this case, it would be bad too. Any questions there? Are we going too fast? We're getting there. Now he's going to talk about breach of trust. If every breach of trust, now breach of trust is really just breaking the rules of trust. And trust is a big, big thing. You know, trust is, you just can't make it any bigger. When we trust somebody, we trust them. So every breach of trust, this is a rule for trust. You don't break a trust. Whether it's for an axe or a donkey or a sheep or clothing or for a lost thing, about which one says, this is it, the case of both parties shall come before the judges, and he whom the judges contend shall pay double to his neighbor. So, in other words, a man gives you something, and he says, I will keep this for you, or if a man, the man that's supposed to be responsible says, I will keep this, you can trust me, and somehow, the donkey gets loose and goes out because of your neglect, or maybe you've stolen it yourself, then you're going to go before the judges, and the judges will determine what shall pay, who shall pay. And the one that's at fault shall pay double to his neighbors. Again, it's holding people responsible. Okay, if a man gives his neighbor a donkey or an ox and a sheep or an animal to keep for him, and it dies and is hurt or is driven away while no one is looking, now this is a no-fault act. And then verse 11, and all this is going to be tied together to verse 13. And while no one is looking, an oath before the Lord shall be made by the two of them. Now, what would this mean, an oath before the Lord? In other words, you would come in and they're going to ask you, did you do this on purpose? Or you're going to have to perjure what we would consider today. You would have to perjure yourself or lie about it. An oath before the Lord, this is the oath, shall be made by the two of them. That he has not laid hands on his neighbor's property, and its owner shall accept it, and shall not make restitution. In other words, there has to be a man that says, "I didn't do it," and then the owner has to say, "I understand." But if it's actually stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. And if it is all torn to pieces, let him bring it as evidence, and he shall not make restitution, for it has been torn to pieces. How would it get torn to pieces? A wild beast, absolutely. Right, Steve. So that... very possible it could happen that way. And if a man borrows anything from his neighbor and it is injured or dies while its owner is not with it, he shall make full restitution. this is borrowing here. This would be neglect. And everybody borrows something, don't we? We all borrow tools. I've done it, and I borrow stuff and I broke it. So what's the thing we do? We make restitution for it. And that applies today just as it applied then. Only it was an animal then. If its owner is with it, and he shall not, if its owner is with it, it shall not make, he shall not make restitution if it is hired and has come for its hire. You understand that? So if you hire a guy to come over to your house and dig a ditch, and while he's there, he hits a big rock and tears up his machine, you hired him. He has to expect that. So he, you don't have to pay to repair his machine. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Boy, I got a quiet group here. Everybody alive? They listening? I guess it all makes sense. It really does make sense when you apply it to today's society.
That's why we have liability insurance.
Absolutely, we have liability insurance. They didn't have insurance then, but God took care of a lot of that. Okay, this next section is a little bit, you know, squirm on your seat kind of thing, because it covers some stuff here, and I'm not going to get into it, but I'll tell you where to go to look about it. If a man seduces a virgin who is not engaged and lies with her, he must pay a dowry for her to be his wife. And if her father absolutely refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money equal to the dowry for virgins. Now, this sounds a little bit like, it's not fair to women. But go to Deuteronomy 22 through 24, and he gets into this a lot more. Okay, got to hurry now. You shall not allow a sorcerer to live. If anybody wants to make a comment on that, you can. And there's a lot more that's talked about in Deuteronomy. And I want to make one point really plain. If you go to Deuteronomy, you'll see that rape is wrong. And I don't think that's at all what he's suggesting here. So anyway, you shall not allow a sorcerer to live. Whosoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. Total immorality. Sorcery is bad. And you shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Remember, you were strangers. Show hospitality to strangers. You shall not afflict a widow or an orphan. If you afflict him at all, or if he does cry out to me, I will surely hear his cry. And my anger will be kindled, and I will kill you, with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless. God is pretty plain of how we treat widows and orphans. If you lend money to a person, to the poor among you, you shall not act as a creditor to him. You shall not charge him interest, and that's usury right there. If you ever take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, you are to return it to him before the sun sets. For this is the only covering. It is a cloak for his body. What else shall he sleep in? It shall come... And it shall come about that when he cries out to me, I will hear him, for I am gracious. Again, very understandable why you're not to keep his cloak. You can take it, but he needs to get it back at night. You shall not curse God, nor curse the ruler of your people. Romans 13, about the people cursing God. Total disrespect for God. Think about it. You shall not deny the offering from your harvest or your vintage. The firstborn of your sons shall give to me. This is all about giving now, and a lot can be said about that, and a lot is taught in the New Testament about it. So really it's interesting, because this right here just tells us a lot about giving. You shall do the same with your oxen and your sheep. It shall be with its mother 7 days. On the eighth day, you shall give it to me. And again, you shall be holy men to me. Therefore, you shall not eat any flesh torn to pieces in the field. You shall throw it to the dogs. We might call that roadkill, but anyway. And then holy people. Does anybody, Rex, does that sound like anything in the New Testament? 1 Peter 2:9, a holy nation, a people set apart for my own possession. He's saying here in verse 31, you shall be a holy people to me. So here he demands it. In the New Testament, he demands it. We stopped. We got 10 minutes to go, but this is where we normally stop. Has anybody got any question, any comment? I don't see everybody standing up with excitement, but this really, isn't this God's wisdom being meted out to us? You just see the wisdom of God. And although these were laws given 3,500 years ago, how much application can we find in them today? I'm done. That's it. Rex, you got anything? Rick, I meant. Nothing? Okay.
I think it's kind of interesting. Earlier, when there was an offense made, they had to pay double. I mean, let's say, you know, I took something of yours, you're not just supposed to give it back, they have to pay double.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of interesting, right? You don't understand. You hear that now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there needs to be a punishment, and if the person that's a thief gets by with it, today's society again, without any punishment, without having to pay any restitution, look where it goes. You just see it. I mean, it's just plain out there. So, yes, there has to be restitution. Okay, that's it. We stop right there. Thank you very much. Great class. Every time you open up God's Word, you just marvel at the wisdom of God. Okay. Oliver, you got any announcements? We'll go right into it. We need one song, I guess.
No announcements.
Okay, we're going to sing a song, and then we'll ask who will lead us in the closing prayer.